inflation that fuels the climate crisis and the freedom that unlocks all the others, the freedom to vote. With this election, we finally have the opportunity to pass the John Lewis Voting Rights Act and the Freedom to Vote Act. And let me be clear, after decades in law enforcement, I know the importance of safety and security, especially at our border. Last year, Joe and I brought together Democrats and conservative Republicans to write the strongest border bill in decades. The Border Patrol endorsed it. But Donald Trump believes a border deal would hurt his campaign. So he ordered his allies in Congress to kill the deal. Well, I refuse to play politics with our security, and here is my pledge to you. As president, I will bring back the bipartisan border security bill that he killed, and I will sign it into law. I know we can live up to our proud heritage as a nation of immigrants and reform our broken immigration system. We can create an earned pathway to citizenship and secure our border. And America, we must also be steadfast in advancing our security and values abroad. As Vice President, I have confronted threats to our security, negotiated with foreign leaders, strengthened our alliances, and engaged with our brave troops overseas. As Commander-in-Chief, I will ensure America always has the strongest, most lethal fighting force in the world. And I will fulfill our sacred obligation to care for our troops and their families, and I will always honor and never disparage their service and their sacrifice. I will make sure that we lead the world into the future on space and artificial intelligence, that America, not China, wins the competition for the 21st century, and that we strengthen, not abdicate, our global leadership. Trump, on the other hand, threatened to abandon NATO. He encouraged Putin to invade our allies, said Russia could, quote, do whatever the hell they want. 5 days before Russia attacked Ukraine, I met with President Zelensky to warn him about Russia's plan to invade. I helped mobilize a global response, over 50 countries, to defend against Putin's aggression. As president, I will stand strong with Ukraine and our NATO allies. With respect to the war in Gaza, President Biden and I are working around the clock because now is the time to get a hostage deal and a ceasefire deal done. And let me be clear, I will always stand up for Israel's right to defend itself, and I will always ensure Israel has the ability to defend itself, because the people of Israel must never again face the horror that a terrorist organization called Hamas caused on October 7, including unspeakable sexual violence and the massacre of young people at a music festival. At the same time, what has happened in Gaza over the past 10 months is devastating. So many innocent lives lost. Desperate, hungry people fleeing for safety over and over again. The scale of suffering is heartbreaking. President Biden and I are working to end this war, such that Israel is secure, the hostages are released, the suffering in Gaza ends, and the Palestinian people can realize their right to dignity, security, freedom, and self-determination. And know this, I will never hesitate to take whatever action is necessary to defend our forces and our interests against Iran and Iran-backed terrorists. I will not cozy up to tyrants and dictators like Kim Jong-un, who are rooting for Trump. Who are rooting for Trump. Because, you know, they know he is easy to manipulate with flattery and favors. They know Trump won't hold autocrats accountable because he wants to be an autocrat himself. And as president, I will never waver in defense of America's security and ideals, because in the enduring struggle between democracy and tyranny, I know where I stand and I know where the United States belongs. I love our country with all my heart. Everywhere I go, in everyone I meet, I see a nation that is ready to move forward, ready for the next step in the incredible journey that is America. I see an America where we hold fast to the fearless belief that built our nation and inspired the world. That here, in this country, anything is possible. That nothing is out of reach. An America where we care for one another, look out for one another, and recognize that we have so much more in common than what separates us. That none of us has to fail for all of us to succeed. And that in unity there is strength. You know, our opponents in this race are out there every day denigrating America, talking about how terrible everything is. Well, my mother had another lesson she used to teach. Never let anyone tell you who you are. You show them who you are. Let us show each other and the world who we are and what we stand for. Freedom, opportunity, compassion, dignity, fairness, and endless possibilities. We are the heirs to the greatest democracy in the history of the world. And on behalf of our children and our grandchildren and all those who sacrificed so dearly for our freedom and liberty, we must be worthy of this moment. It is now our turn to do what generations before us have done, guided by optimism and faith, to fight for this country we love, to fight for the ideals we cherish, and to uphold the awesome responsibility that comes with the greatest privilege on earth, the privilege and pride of being an American. Great chapter in the most extraordinary story ever told. Thank you. God bless you, and may God bless the United States of America. Thank you all.
Knocked it out of the park. Inspirational, uplifting. What a wonderful speech.
Excellent. And the crowd enthused. This raucous crowd at the DNC, at the United Center. They're loving them some Kamala Harris. I'm going to get out of the way. Let's listen to Beyonce. I'm telling these tears go hollow. Second gentleman, Doug Emhoff, has joined Kamala on the stage. Gwen and Tim Walz have joined Vice President Harris and her husband on the stage. He, of course, her nominee for the vice presidency. Now the two couples raised hands from the stage. Harrison Walls in the middle, Gwen and Doug on the outsides. What do you think? Do you think they'll try to exceed the 100,000 balloons dropped at the RNC in Milwaukee? That looks like a hell of a lot of balloons. The respective families have joined on the stage. Vice President Harris, her husband Doug Emhoff, Tim Walz, the new VP nominee of the Democratic Party, Gwen Walz there, and now the larger families have joined on the stage, and we've been joined by one of WCPT's own, part of the family, Patty Vasquez. Patty, dancing, enjoying your night.
What? Am I singing?
Yeah, let's get Patty on the air. Welcome, Patty. Welcome back to the desk.
Thank you. You know how hard it is to sit in the press box when you're supposed to be observing, to be separated emotionally from what's going on.
Yes, no emotion, Antonio, no support.
Antonio, did you hear me clap when Eva Longoria said, she said, boy, I was like, oh, no, I'm not supposed to. Did you hear that clap? I just said that one, and I was like, oh, no.
No, I take it back.
I got to tell you, Chicago is representing this party. This is going to go all night long, I suspect. Lots of balloons, lots of people on the stage now. And the Democratic delegates, they are still partying. Very few have left the arena at this stage. And Harris giving hugs all around. Lots of people feeling great about this. Patriotic themes. What did you think of her speech?
Oh, I thought it was great. I mean, it was funny is that line, I believe it was safety, dignity, and justice. And when she, as a prosecutor, that she would say, Kamala for the people. And she was talking about how when she talked to survivors, I'm a survivor of sexual assault. And the idea that someone would say, because I was, anyway, not my story. But anyway, the fact that she would talk to them about how when someone is hurt, we are all hurt in this justice system. Yeah. And talking about like from those experiences of wanting to help people and help them feel safe is it resonates with me. I will say, I was running down here and there's a woman who is a, I believe she was Palestinian, but she was one of the protesters. And someone asked her how she felt about the speech, and she said it was very disappointing. That line that she used about I wrote it down, but Palestinians having a self-determination right, security. I can't remember the third word, where she said that was just for the college students to give them basically a little bit of red meat so that they would be satisfied. She knew that was placating. Anyway, that was just something I heard. I like eavesdropping. I grabbed that one right out of the air. But yes, I thought it was great.
A great Palestinian, very thoughtful man last night. Our Uber driver had lots to say about this point. I don't know if they're just simply trying to placate the young people. I think this is a broad tent party, and Kamala trying to speak to a lot of people.
Yep. Right. Yeah.
Republican Congressman Adam Kinzinger preceded her to the stage. What do you think of the Republican involvement, especially a guy like Kinzinger,
sure,
who has been on the January 6th committee and obviously served our nation? What do you think about having Kinzinger lead her out there?
It's interesting because some folks would say, or have been telling me over the last few days, they were hoping it wouldn't be Kinzinger because they're like, you know, he's just using this to then, you know, relaunch his political career, get back in with Republicans. But I did like him saying things like Donald Trump suffocated the soul of the Republican Party. And it, I mean, like, not for nothing, because I'm a far left liberal.
Right.
I don't know what the soul was like before it got snuffed. But
it wasn't great then, and it's gone now. And also, I mean, you acknowledge the fact, hey, you know what, Republicans, as Kinzinger said, something I learned about Democrats and the Democratic Party, they're patriots too.
Yes, so that's an important thing, going back to her speech. And I noticed if you listen to the way Pete Buttigieg frames his arguments as well, is that it is all grounded in freedoms. And I think that's something that we let the Republicans take over that language of patriotism. And it is true. If you can't drink clean water, you are not free. If you cannot have affordable health care, you are not free, because we're often tied to our jobs because we're afraid to leave them. If you are afraid for your child's life in school, or if you are in a synagogue or at a concert and you're afraid of gunfire, you are not free. It isn't freedom, and I love that we're reclaiming the patriotism and the language of freedom.
And the flags, and using the flags.
Sure,
I mean,
sure,
it's everything that the Republicans have taken over and claimed, and they're being reclaimed by the Democrats.
Yes. And not only are they partying in Chicago on the big screen, they've got multiple cities watch parties. I saw my hometown, Madison, Wisconsin, represented. Atlanta, a lot of swing states. Phoenix, Arizona, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. What do you think? The overall impression, obviously, we're amongst the deep blue teams here.
The believers are here.
But how do you think the impression was for those watching at home?
I think that for those, first of all, the pace of tonight, I think, sort of helps folks who were like maybe checking out to see what the Democrats had to say. There weren't a lot of long, drawn-out speeches. They hit a lot of topics.
Yeah.
They hit veterans issues, and they had
security, national security, world security, safety,
gun violence,
so
I think they touch on a lot of things that are important to all Americans. So I would think that this appeal would have some appeal to those who are like not sure. We're never going to change MAGA. They're all in. We're communists. In a, you know, it's not for them. Although the joy, I'm sure that joy will make them angry. And I do want to touch on one thing before I forget. Is that, you know, I didn't get a chance to touch on last night because we didn't see all the images of Gus Walls that were popping up
in real time. Yes,
in real time. And I have to tell you, I've been processing that today. I have a severely disabled child, and the idea that we are now on the verge—I was weeping about this today—that we are on the verge of electing a vice president who has the experiences of families like mine, who know what it's like to have a life that you didn't dream of, but are no less dazzled by the magic of the accomplishments that your child does have, and the fact that no one told him to sit down, no one tried to get him to stop, because he's a neurodivergent child who has a nonverbal learning disability, ADHD, and it blows my mind that one of the most latest things we learned on top of all the other things.
Right.
I'm like, is that, you don't even have that anywhere in your speech to have a child with a disability? What?
Right. And the joy, the obvious love with the family.
That's my dad.
It was amazing. And what? Critical. The Republicans all over the place. We had a right-wing radio host in Milwaukee saying terrible things. Yeah. A lot of people are taking their posts down, Patty.
Well, it's good. I'm impressed that anyone knows shame in MAGA land.
Ain't that the truth?
That's wonderful. And look at how happy it's their anniversary. I mean, some people, I don't know what anniversary is celebrating. Is it? It's got to be 10th. Is it 10th?
11th.
11th.
20.
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying, most people get some sort of gift. I guess that's quite the celebration. You can't top that. I didn't say.
I've been married 22 years this weekend.
Oh, congratulations!
Kamala Harris and Doug Imhoff have been married 11 years.
11, okay.
I wonder if he's going to play the recorded message. He talked to his second gentleman. What a great story he told.
Yeah, that was.
He said he plays, well, more accurately,
she
plays that message every anniversary. Patty Vasquez from WCPT, Dominic and Crute from the Devil's Advocates doing live post speech coverage here at the DNC at the United Center. Where's Beyonce, man? I was promised.
Everybody thought
some Beyonce. They were reporting.
The Hill was reporting that Beyonce would be
was here. Where's Queen Bee?
About 22 minutes ago, I saw from her team that Beyonce was never scheduled to be here. They don't know where that rumor came from. By the way, I love Kamala's sister, Maya, I believe is her name, was fantastic.
Yeah, too. What
Maya Harris.
Yeah, Maya, yes.
And the other thing, Mitt Romney did feel it necessary to tweet out he was not the super secret guest tonight.
That's... Well, I think it's funny. I don't know if you noticed this all week. There's been color coordination, and I don't know who had the list of what you were supposed to wear on certain days. But I am glad I brought my white blazer today because the women were all wearing white. I imagine for suffragettes and the fact that we have our first woman as the presidential nominee.
I hate to make comment on Kamala Harris's wardrobe choice, but black on black, a power black
That's
on black
powerful.
Trump is something that a working person should never. Never entertained because of that statement right there.
Yep. Donald Trump is no friend of workers. And I think he got comfortable in that interview and was going on and on and on. It was an amazing period of time, which listening to two men who knew nothing about what they were talking about, but felt like they had an opinion that they needed to share on every single subject. But this was, these are Donald Trump's true colors. He wanted... He admires union busters. He admired a billionaire, a fellow wealthy person firing workers for engaging in their fundamental human right to just engage in concerted activity for their mutual aid and benefit.
Right.
He admires Elon Musk for firing people because they decided to speak out.
Now, let me ask you this, because, we've seen Trump's record. In fact, my union, the Teamsters Union, the general president went and spoke at the RNC. And for that, and for my disagreeing with that, we're basically on the outs. Because my fear had been that he was going to normalize what Trump's record was. I now see a lot of my Teamster brothers finally coming around and going, wait a second, the Trump era wasn't great. Is this a good opportunity? I mean, for Kamala Harris to take a look at the Trump years, especially for labor, and the Biden years, and go, there's never been clearer distinctions between two ideological goalposts than there are between Trump and the Biden-Harris camp. As the director of advocacy, is this not something that should be on billboards somewhere, something we should be screaming from mountaintops?
We are doing that now in communities across the country to make clear the contrast between what was the Trump administration and the Biden-Harris administration. We're doing that as much as possible. It is so clear given the fact that this Elon Musk interview where he is praising Elon Musk for firing striking workers. You can contrast that with the fact that Joe Biden walks picket lines. For the first time ever, a sitting president went out and walked a picket line with the auto workers. Kamala Harris decided to do a swing through, very union cities when she announced, when she started her campaign just in the last couple of weeks, and picked one of our union brothers, Tim Walz, to be her running mate. He has walked picket lines in Minnesota for nurses. He walks one of the Stellantis picket lines, and he has one of the most, aggressively pro-worker records as a governor of a state we've seen in recent years. So she is, it's a difference between night and day between Harris and Trump, Harris Walz versus Trump Vance when it comes to working people's issues. Yeah. And this is not, like you said, one of these elections where you can vote on other issues and ignore the economic issues. If you're a working person, the pocketbook issues, because Donald Trump is bad news for working people's bottom lines.
This isn't one of those elections where they're all the same. No, very, very different indeed. And you brought up Tim Walz, who I got to tell you, I'm not sure if they made that guy in a Petri dish, but I don't think there's a more perfect pick to be her vice presidential candidate than that guy. I mean, hits every box that I've been saying Democrats need to check off. The ability to talk to rural voters and maybe move some rural voters into the camp of worker issues, I think is fabulous.
I totally agree. He feels like everybody's Midwestern dad.
He's that guy you want to, I know it's a stupid line, but he's the guy you want to have a beer with or several. So last line of questioning I've got for you, because, we're moving quickly towards the convention. I know labor will be front and center in a lot of the discussions, and it's going to be the kind of messaging event that I think is going to be important to compare and contrast these two different styles. In your opinion, in your thoughts, if you're the guy with the magic wand, what are the things, what are the top three things voters should know about Trump? And then also, and how Harris compares in those worlds.
Okay, so the top three things? Well, I'd say Donald Trump effectively two accomplishments while he was president, and that shows what he prioritized. The first accomplishment he had was he cut taxes for the rich. That was priority number one for him. Priority number two was packing our court system with right-wing judges that have managed to take away lots of our rights, especially in the labor and employment realm. But across the board, the American people have lost rights thanks to his appointments in the judiciary. And then number three, he is a union buster. He has, like you said, he admires companies that will fire workers for speaking out. That's the kind of person and the kind of behavior Donald Trump admires. So he's not going to stick up for working people. Whereas Kamala Harris and is being part of this Biden administration, they have made a difference left and right when it comes to working people. Pulling us out of the pandemic and the downturn that was happening around the pandemic, the amount of investment, the actual investment in real infrastructure projects, not the infrastructure weeks that Donald Trump would claim were existing and nothing would happen, but in fact, money has been moving. Shovels have been hitting the dirt and jobs have been created thanks to the Biden-Harris administration, putting lots and lots of Americans to work, having some of the lowest unemployment we've seen, sustained unemployment that we've seen in our lifetimes. And the work that Harris in particular did, making recommendations in a White House task force to make sure the entire federal government is looking out for workers every time they do anything, whether they're contracting, dealing with a contractor or putting out grants or awards, think about the impact this will have on working people and make sure you are promoting good jobs when you spend the taxpayer dollar. She has been a critical part of that kind of agenda. And she frankly broke the Senate tie. You know, she was a tie-breaking vote on lots and lots of Senate votes where, you know, we were putting in to place better judges for our judiciary, judges who come from working class backgrounds, who might have represented workers, not just judges who represented the executive suites of big corporations.
Again, the choice never more divided. The posts never further apart, in my view. There seems to be only one choice in this election. But Jody, I appreciate you taking time for us, sharing your knowledge and your passion. Thanks so much.
Thank you. I really appreciate you having me.
Jody Calamine, AFL-CIO's Director of Advocacy. You want to check out their work, AFLCIO.org. You can see all the great things that they're doing. Also follow them on social media. I want to hear your thoughts. Do you see the difference? Or are we still stuck on those divisive issues? I want to hear it. Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Right back. Stick around.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, Eau Claire, the Valley's home of Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Partly to mostly cloudy skies here in the overnight. We'll be near 60 at sunrise, a light south to southeast wind. Friday morning, though, we'll start off with one or two showers or storms, then partly sunny skies. Highs reach near 80 degrees. It's 66 at our studios.
It's summertime in Wisconsin, and whatever the weather, it will impact you and your plans.
Should I water the garden? Will our event be rained out? Count on your local Civic Media radio station for in-depth details and the most up-to-date forecast.
Temperatures are rising into the mid and upper 70s under sunny skies.
It's your weather and more for your part of Wisconsin.
On your local Civic Media radio station and streaming on the Civic Media app.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So as we wrap up day two here in Chicago, lots of interesting emails, lots of folks responding to some of the things that we've seen here on the program, some of the things we've seen during the convention, and the really great part about it, it's been mostly positive. The hope and joy thing seems to be catching on. Seems to be something folks really are interested in. So appreciate the reaching out. Appreciate the emails. Way too much to get to. But this idea that it's about making lives better, and this is the focus that we came here thinking they were going to hammer on, because, of course, it makes sense, right? Ultimately, I think, you know, Rick Wilson, when we talked to him earlier, hit on something that I think I'd like my Republican friends to think about. Because Rick's conversion away from, you know, the rhetoric that my generation has been, you know, basically force-fed is that, you know, conservatism is about tax cuts. Republicans have put all of their eggs in the tax cut basket and pushed, you know, again, as much as we can do to make corporations happy, as much as we can allow them to consolidate, as much as we can allow them to deregulate. And this has created the environment in which we find ourselves. So as I said about, you know, Joe Biden for the last 2 years, this guy transformationally is moving us away from that kind of model. 40 years of Republican policy, 40 years of bad ideology, and back to what his generation understood, which is if workers have power and corporations have power and you bring them together on an equal plane, they usually come out with a good agreement. And we have a decent society. Now, I do find it interesting, some of the blowback that I've gotten, and it's been mostly from my brother Teamsters, who are angry over my position on President Sean O'Brien, whom I absolutely supported, and the work that they're doing in organizing and bringing people together and fighting for good contracts is fantastic.
the sad reality is the distraction was his appearance at the RNC and the whole, you know, thumbs up thing with Trump. I wish we could spend more time on the let's make lives better. And, you know, Monday night you saw working people, a wide array of diverse working people coming together and moving us in a direction that I think is going to be very helpful. Now, you know, in talking with Rick Wilson, I go back to this education, because I want there to be a functional Republican Party. You know, as I was listening to Rick talk about, hey, you need labor unions. You need that balance. You need them to be able to say, hey, we demand a portion of the profits that we make. And when he said, look, and I think one of the most important quotes out of, you know, the working class of this country, especially the red hat folks right now, have been sold on this idea that it's the black and brown communities, it's the others. They're the reason that life hasn't turned out the way it was supposed to. They're the reason our wages are going down. They're the reason that we've been struggling to make ends meet. It's them. And as he said, look, McKinsey is responsible for more job losses than anyone. Because you're pushing this ideology of let's seek the cheapest labor in the most exploitable countries. Bad policy? Yes, absolutely. But a corporatist mentality that, look, quite frankly, as I pointed out to Rick, Democrats were part of as well. I was never a huge Bill Clinton fan. The DLC did not do any favors for working people. This idea that you're going to train your way out of all these job losses is, well, just ludicrous. And I go back to, you know, my experience growing up in Cleveland, watching the deindustrialization, watching the steel mills close, watching the machine shops close, watching those auto factories pare down to where they're just a mere shadow of what they once were. The idea of redundancy and getting rid of people, that to me is, that's the lesson from what Rick had to say. And the hope is that we listen to that. I would love to have a Republican Party with Rick Wilson at the head of it. Do we agree on everything? No, not even close. And that's a good thing, because I think you do need to have, you need to have both sides at the table. I don't want the pendulum to swing too far one way or the other. Call me a centrist if you have to, but I know that you can bang out the best agreement if you have to. Our political system has given both sides cover to not get things done for working people. And that's where a lot of this anger is. But I go back to the statement by Rick, you know, that we've allowed a media culture to spring up. The right-wing messaging mastery machine has honed in on this message of it's them. It's the other. Where we used to know. We used to know which side we were on. We used to see the corporate excesses. We used to see the billionaires who, you know, in the case of Elon Musk, fire striking workers. Our history is riddled with rich people hiring working class people to go after other working class people. That divide and conquer, it works. And the hope is that while we're here, some of the messaging gets out. Now, how many Republicans, how many of my red hat friends are watching any of this? Very little. But they should. I watched the RNC convention because I wanted to see what the Republicans were bringing to the table. And there wasn't much. In fact, you know, not a lot of star power there either. You know, the Democrats here have put together a very impressive program. Now remember, as I've said from the start, this is about political theater. This is putting on the best face. This is about getting Kamala Harris and Tim Walz elected. That's what this is about. But it's also about saying, what kind of a vision? What direction do we want as a country? And that comes back to us, doesn't it? What kind of a country do we want? Do we want one where we want to encourage families to have children? Help them with paid medical leave, help them with child care, make sure that the education their children get is second to none, make sure that they don't have to worry about health security and retirement security down the road. maybe just a thought. These are things we can and should be doing without question. In the richest country in the history of humanity, we should not be, we shouldn't be struggling the way working people are. I ran into a good friend while I was here. He sought me out, and we had a lovely conversation. And one of the things he hit, because he moved to the UK, one of the things that he hit me with that I wasn't prepared for was, he goes, you know, I love London. I'm never coming back. He goes, you know, I pay 4%, 4.5% tax, and I have health care for my entire life. He's an American living in London. His wife is with him as well. They're about to have children. So 4.5%. That's it. And you go, what do I pay as a portion of my income? What is it that I get? Wait a second. Hold on. Somewhere in the 18 to 25%, about 24% is what we pay for our health care. So when you stop and you think about what could be with smart policy, with sound investment, what could we do? Could we have a social safety net that would encourage families to have children? Because look, the right, J.D. Vance kept talking about, you know, what is it about the women who are childless, something about, I don't know. Not all of us have mother-in-laws who can take a year off to come spend raising our children. Not all of us, like Trump, can hire nannies to take care of our children. Working people have real struggles. And out of this convention, I think we're going to see a lot of that, a lot of the discussions around that. On day one, we saw a lot of discussions around abortion rights and reproductive rights, which rightly so, it is a major issue. And you know, I was just reading the news the other day that said, you know, moderate white women are flocking to Kamala Harris. What kind of a country do we want? And I bring that up time and time again. Because the emails I've gotten, you know, people are like, yeah, we want strong labor rights. Yeah, we want strong voting rights. We want strong protections in the workplace and strong protections for consumers. We want a government that's going to work for us. And I think that's the thing. Because as I had this conversation with this friend, he goes, look, you know, the government helps. That you get things for your tax dollars. You get health care, you get retirement security, you get help raising your children. So that while you're off working, you're not worried that the end is near. So again, I come back to this moment of what kind of a country do we want? Where do we go from here? And how do we get to that place? That's the question. If you didn't get a chance to listen to Joe Biden's speech, I highly, highly suggest you do. Well worth the time, well worth the effort. If you missed any of today's program, make sure you download the podcast. Wherever you get your favorite podcast, you will find ours. And as always, I appreciate you being here. Hope you've enjoyed our coverage thus far of the convention. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. We'll be back in the studio next week. Tomorrow, back here from the United Center here in Chicago. And hopefully we don't get hung up in security again. Thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Email Rick at rick@thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, thericksmithshow.com, as we're here at the United Center in Chicago for the DNC convention. As you know, as you've been paying attention, hope you've been paying attention, this is where the action is. And as I said, what I love about coming to these places, you run into people that, well, you've known in the past, you've had on the program in the past, maybe forgotten about a little bit. And that's why I'm just thrilled to have my next guest, Mandela Barnes. You may remember Mandela ran for Senate back in 2022. We saw him on the tour when we were in Wisconsin in 2022 for the Working Class Heroes Tour. Former Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, of course. Happy to take time. Glad I saw you when I first walked into the convention center. If I look like all dazed and confused, it's because I was dazed and confused.
No, that's the great thing. I don't know how we got the spot we got, but
you have prime seating.
It is clean living.
Yeah,
I'm telling you that. But how you been? What have you been up to?
So I've been really good. You know, obviously not doing the thing that I wish I could have been doing right now. The thing that
makes
I
two of us.
The thing. Thank you so much. The thing that I work so hard for, and the thing that so many other people. That's the other part about it. I know what I put into the campaign, but also think about the countless volunteers, the grassroots donors, the folks who showed up for the first time to knock on the door or make a phone call for a candidate. I have such deep appreciation and respect for those folks. So, you know, not doing the thing that I wish, you know, that we wish I could have been doing. However, still been able to stay involved and engaged in a very real way. Two big projects I'm working on. One is Power to the Polls, Wisconsin. We are focusing our efforts on black, brown, and working class voters all across the state. And we've had some incredible successes. This past spring, we helped flip the Green Bay City Council for the first time, and I cannot tell you when. We were the only outside spender in that race. We certainly were very active in the previous spring election to elect Justice Janet Protasiewicz to the Supreme Court. And we do this by not just showing up during election time, not just 90 days before an election. We have a plan for year-round sustained engagement because folks are tired of being taken advantage of. People are tired of you just showing up to ask for a vote but no follow-up. And in addition to talking about candidates, we talk about issues, and we also talk about things that have been happening or things that have not been happening, and if folks are frustrated and upset, how to properly address those concerns.
Yeah, no, it's about building that community. It's about constant engagement. I keep trying to tell my labor friends this.
Yeah.
You can't ramp up a month or 2 months before an election. You've got to be part of the fabric of the community, part of the fiber of that area to get people in moving in that direction. So that's 100%. Great news.
Yeah, no, and it's very exciting for me to have a return to organizing. But there's also a project. It's called Forward Together Wisconsin. This is an organization that I started from scratch to more successfully implement the Inflation Reduction Act in Wisconsin. And this is where we get to marry environmentalism as well as organized labor. We have a big project with a group called Green Homeowners United. It is a woman-owned union contractor. And with this, we've been able to help weatherize homes all across the city of Milwaukee so far. We're expanding into other areas. And we've been doing this through charitable giving for working class families and low-income families, people who can't necessarily afford the upfront costs for an energy assessment or for insulation work to be done. So we're helping folks who wouldn't typically be a part of the climate conversation, the sustainability conversation, and we are making it very real for them to show how active the Biden-Harris administration has been and how the impacts of that legislation is truly life-changing, if not just cost-saving.
Yeah, no, it's a program like that I would love to see on a national scale, much like during my grandparents' era where they built like little Levittown all across this country, mm-hmm. So that people coming back from the war could have affordable housing, something kind of we might need a little bit. You know, it'd be great if we could get some affordable housing with some energy independence. Might sound like a future worth having.
And it can't all just be a developer giveaway for low-income housing, right? This has to be truly, truly beneficial for working-class folks, for lower-income folks, and truly beneficial for the whole, not just to line folks' pockets. We see this too often where there are winners and there are losers, and there are a handful of winners far too often. People that make out like bandits, people that basically are able to accumulate a large swath of the benefit for the American people, and the rest is just spread out. And that's why we're in this situation that we're in, where income inequality is at an all-time high, where wages have not kept up with inflation, where people are struggling to find adequate health care options.
Now, you know, obviously you're doing this work with black and brown and working class communities. I listened to the orange guy say how wonderful he's doing with all of those groups, and I'm I'm curious your assessment.
Yeah, my assessment is much like other assessments of things that come out of the former president's mouth. And that is a lot of inaccuracies, a lot of lies, things that just are not true. And it feels as if he's working to convince himself more than the American people, because folks who have lived it, people who have experienced it in real time, know that quality of life wasn't demonstrably better at all under Donald Trump. It has all been fallacy. And we're talking about long-term success of this country and for the lives of working-class people. There has been no better candidate for working-class Americans there's been no better president for working-class Americans, at least in my lifetime, than Joe Biden.
No, and hopefully Kamala Harris picks up that mantle and moves it forward. And look, I look at Tim Walz, her choice for VP, and I don't see how they cannot. Given the her record and his record, I see great things in the future.
I absolutely see great things in the future. And having been in part of the administration for 4 years, I think that Vice President Kamala Harris is in prime position to carry that banner of fighting for working class Americans. Not just carry it through the campaign, but carry it through 8 years, hopefully, of governing this country.
No, I'm with you. So we're here at this big event. One of the things I've been saying is I've been to past conventions. I don't remember feeling the same kind of energy. And I know that sounds like it's kind of a cliche, but everybody here seems to be, everything's positive, it seems, so far.
Things are positive so far, and things are, still largely positive, even on the outskirts of convention. And, I'm honestly overwhelmed right now. It's a lot going on, and, I think we should appreciate that there's a lot going on, and there's a lot for us to celebrate and be happy for. At the same time, it's not even about ignoring other things, right? Like, I think, as I said before, and I've said many times, we are a big tent party. There will be protests, right? And that is fine, because if you look at the other party that just squashes dissent immediately, I think about the former Vice President, Mike Pence, who had a snowball's chance in hell of becoming the president because he dared go against Donald Trump. That is a party of one person's personality, and it is damaging to this entire country, and people are paying the price as a result. You have people from the village board level to state legislative level to all the way up to Congress and the U.S. Senate who will not stand up and do the right thing in that party, because they are, quite frankly, afraid of the retribution of Donald Trump. And that's not the kind of person I want running this country.
No, as I've been saying, I think there has to be a resounding victory for Kamala Harris and Tim Walz in November in order for the Republicans to find themselves. Because, look, I still want there to be two functional parties. I do want there to be, some – I don't want – pendulums to swing too far to one way or another.
Debate is healthy.
Absolutely.
Debate is healthy. I
want competing ideas.
Exactly.
The problem is the Republicans don't have any ideas, it seems.
Yeah, it's like a battery. We are the positive charge. There's the negative. But you got to have both in order for anything to function.
So, coming out of this, because clearly this is going to be a presentation of the best of this duo, what do you expect to see over the next couple of days? And then coming out of this, what do you hope people take from it?
Well, I'm certain that we'll see a vision for the United States of America. And that's, again, something that we didn't see at the convention in my hometown of Milwaukee. And I hope that people will take away a sense of optimism. I hope that people will leave here rejuvenated. I hope that people will leave here ready to fight like our democracy depends on. I hope that people will leave here fighting like reproductive rights depend on. I hope people will leave here fighting like voting rights and labor rights depend on it, because they most certainly do, and it is important for us to show up and act like it.
Yeah, now, obviously, as an organizer, you're on the ground talking with people every day in Wisconsin, knocking on doors, kissing babies, all that stuff. Maybe not as a candidate, maybe. What's the sense that you're getting from people? I know in my neighborhood, some of the rhetoric is tapped down. I'm not seeing so many of the flags flying. People aren't as obnoxiously wearing the hats. Are you seeing kind of the same thing in your area?
Yeah, so I actually took a bike ride yesterday over the span of 2 days from La Crosse, Wisconsin to Milwaukee. And you do see some interesting yard signs along the route. I actually did that same ride last year. And while certainly there were number of Trump signs that were still out there. It's just the way life is. I think it paled in comparison to last year, to the riot last year. I think the intensity was a little bit different than it was on last year's riot.
No, because I'm looking at this and it's a different feel. Obviously, a different feel from 2016 to 2020, but an enormously different feel from 2020 to 2024.
Yeah, certainly, certainly a different feel. But again, we can't take a single thing for granted. We've taken things for granted before, and we see how that happens. We have to play, we have to play every round. We have to show up every day as if we're down a point.
Now, last line of questioning I want to get into, because clearly we want Kamala Harris and Tim Walz to win at the top of the ticket. But like you had, in 2022, you needed some help. I think people running in these races, Senate, House, state houses across the country, going to need some help, some down ticket, some coattails. Do you think these two bring that?
I think so. And we have new legislative maps in Wisconsin, too, which gives us an opportunity, a shot to make a larger dent in the state legislative seats, to have a bigger impact on folks' daily lives. And one thing is going to come up all the time, once you get out of a room like this, once you get into the world, people will always ask, can she win? Can she win? Is she going to be able to do it? And I can tell you that I obviously had those same questions. Can he win? Can he raise the money? Well, I broke fundraising records in the state. I came within a point of defeating an incumbent, the closest U.S. Senate race in the state of Wisconsin in over 100 years, the closest challenge to an incumbent last cycle. So, yes, I could have won. And I can tell you this, the people who believed that I could win the most, for sure, not the most, but the people who certainly for sure believe that I can win are Republicans. And that is why they spent unseen amounts of money in third party advertising in this race, and third party spending. It was the largest largest amount of super PAC spending in any Senate race. We were outspent by $26 million in outside spending, and I lost by 1 point.
That is obscene.
$26 million. So, of course, it's certainly possible, and we need to make sure that Republicans are not the only ones that think Kamala Harris can win.
No, and look, those numbers just obscene, which leads me to go, geez, we need campaign finance reform in a bad way, along with so many other things. I know I said last question, but I got to ask you something else. We going to get you back on the trail? Because I thought you ran a great campaign. I thought you an incredible spokesperson, very personable on the trail. We saw you a couple of times. It was great. Any future plans?
Well, I really do appreciate that. And I can say that it's not a no. That's all I can say right now. Because, you never know what the future holds.
No. That's what I was looking for.
I'm honored to still be involved. Even at this level, I can tell you that I'm not going away. The answer is more yes than no. But it has to be the right thing, the right opportunity. I don't want to run for something just for the sake of running for it. I need to be able to put as much of my heart and energy into it as I did the last go around.
No, that's the honesty. I don't know. No. Everyone's in.
I'm more yes than no.
There you go. Mandela Barnes, I appreciate you taking time for us.
Hey, thank you so much.
Enjoy the convention.
Hey, you too.
I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. I'm going to take a quick break back here in Chicago. Again, I want to hear your thoughts. rick@therickSmithShow.com. Right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1831. That was the year Nate Turner led a slave rebellion in Southampton, Virginia. From a young age, Turner believed he had a purpose ordained by God. Turner had learned to read from one of his master's sons. He had also learned a deep hatred of slavery from his mother. He came to be regarded as a spiritual leader, or a prophet, by many of the nearby enslaved people. In February of 1831, there was a solar eclipse. Turner took it as a sign that it was time to lead a revolt. He began to make plans. Then, along with seven other enslaved people, he killed the entire family that owned his plantation. The group made their way from plantation to plantation,
killing 51 whites in all. Their plan was to raid the town of Jerusalem. But before they could reach the town, they were met by a militia of 3,000. The small band of between 60 and 75 insurrectionists were no match for the militia. More than 50 slaves were executed. Many more were beaten. Some were from as far away as neighboring North Carolina and had nothing to do with the uprising. White hysteria swept the South. More repressive slave codes were passed in many states. Harsher restrictions were enacted against enslaved people for preaching, being educated, and assembling in large groups. That year, Virginia, Maryland, and Florida all passed laws restricting even freed black men from carrying a gun. Nate Turner escaped the militia into the Dismal Swamp. He stayed there for 6 weeks before he was discovered. He was tried, convicted, and hung. Many historians credit Turner's rebellion and the harsh repression that followed in hastening the coming Civil War and the end of the slave labor system. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap. WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire. And streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.